Welcome back to The Life Hustle. Thank you for listening, whether you are in the car or whether you're at home putting on the kettle. We hope that you're taking a little bit of time out for yourself to listen to this episode today. Thank you to all of our listeners so far. A very special shout out to a good friend of ours, Amy, who is in Bali. She never misses an episode, so we want to send her all the love and Bali blessings. Thanks for listening, Amy. And to everyone who's given us feedback on the last couple of episodes. We are The Life Hustle. I'm Emer, and with me is Viv, my partner in crime. And we set up The Life Hustle day one because we had a little bit of social media fatigue. I guess we were just sick of seeing perfect posts that didn't match our life.
Exactly.
And I guess we just wanted to use social media for social good. We were meeting a lot of people through our work, maybe a lot of young people in particular, who were a little bit stressed out or suffering from anxiety. And a lot of it we felt stemmed back to unrealistic kind of social media, maybe accounts and, you know, a lot of the doom and gloom that we can see on our timeline. So we just wanted to do something that was a bit more positive.
Share stories from inspiring people. We love talking to people and telling their stories.
We do, yeah. Murder for the chats. So we've had a lovely couple of episodes so far, and we've really dipped in and out of conversations with people from all walks of life, really, all different careers, all different backgrounds. And it's been lovely to hear that it's inspired people. I always feel, Viv, that like, if only five people listen to the podcast and they go away and it makes them think about, you know, what they want out of life, or, you know, it just gives them a new perspective, I'm happy.
Yeah, exactly.
I think working in the fashion industry for years, everything's about kind of image, status, and this is the complete opposite. Like, it's, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And we want to, I suppose, get it out there that there's a lot of hustle in the background.
Yes.
And people are working hard to make a career path for themselves.
Yes. Absolutely. Which brings us to our very special guest this week. We're really, really happy to have him in the studio. So back in March 2012, a new business appeared at the farmers markets in Cork, offering healthy, convenient food made from locally produced and sourced ingredients. 7 years on, the Rocket Man is now in its headquarters on Princess Street. It's a household name, and they have even fulfilled the adventurous concept of hosting Ireland's highest farmers markets, dishing out no less than 200 salads on the top of Caron Tool a couple of years back. We can't wait to hear all about it. So we're here today with the Rocket Man owner, Jack Crotty, to hear about his new business, which provides an online platform for some of the best food producers in neighbourfood.ie. Now, I'm actually borderline obsessed with the website. I went on and used it yesterday, and I just feel so passionate about this. I think everyone needs to get on board with this, because I think, I just can't believe there hasn't been something like this in the city before. Jack, how did it all begin?
Well, first of all, intro, like...
You're touched. Like, is that me?
Touched. So touched.
You deserve that.
We're totally starstruck. We're like, oh my God. You know, like, for me anyway, working and being from the city centre, like, when Rocket Man opened in town, like I come from the old school crew of, you bought your lunch into work, and every office or workplace had the microwave, the toaster and the kettle. And nobody even went out for coffee. You know, coffee was even fancy back in the day. Do you remember us in the examiner? Like, no one went out for lunch.
Yeah, you know, maybe every second week when you got paid, you went for an old scone and a cup of tea. There was definitely no coffee.
Don't lie, we went for wine and never came back. And yeah, so when Rocket Man opened, like, we all, like, I think we all wanted to eat well, but I guess it's a small city, so there weren't huge options. It was kind of, you know, go to a central deli or something. Roll and soup and stuff. So it was nearly exotic for us to have these beautiful, filling, nourishing salads that we could just go in, quickly grab and go. And even now, when I go there during the week, there's a queue at the door at lunchtime. It's amazing.
Yeah, by all means, it was pretty exotic even to us when we were kind of putting it all together as well. You know, it wasn't like as if I just took my home kitchen into Princess Street, and, you know, it was an exploration of an idea that people wanted to eat more pulse and grains. Really, the kind of concept came from a couple of roots, which were, okay, we want to be price competitive with places that are serving bad food. And if you want to use good ingredients, you're going to have to be clever about it. So you can't just serve a better chicken sandwich or a better bacon.
I know.
Because the quality of that stuff means the price of that stuff goes up. And if you're trying to charge a massive price for things, it's exclusive and then it's not fair. So the idea to do more vegetable-based food, plant-based food, was to try and be more price competitive so that you could get a lunch for the same price with us as you could in a Centro Deli, but that you were getting much more, you know, honest nutrition.
And you know what I love? Jean Noonan, who did last week's episode on wellness and yoga and kind of mindfulness and retreats, she said that, like, you know, for Rocketman to be such a household name, genuinely, like, she just, you know, was talking about food and said, you know, that if we could all just eat locally sourced seasonal food, you know, we're kind of winning. Or if we can consciously make a bit of a dip towards that. And she was saying how she loves going into the Rocketman and chatting to your mum, Simone, and, you know where the food comes from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's only been a turn in the last few years, though. People are a lot more health conscious and there's a lot more vegetarians and vegans. So I think, like, you found your niche and, you know, that was amazing.
Yeah,
for
sure.
To have.
I mean, at the time it was probably perceived as weird by quite a lot of our, like, current customers. Do you know, they've kind of come around a little bit more.
We don't like change in general.
Yeah, maybe.
Did you get many people asking, like, for chicken with their salad?
Yeah, like, we still get kind of funny ones, like people coming in with made up words I've never heard before, pointing at things. And you've got to draw the line between, like, helping people educate and learn about stuff
of course,
not making them feel silly. So sometimes you just kind of let it off, you know?
Okay.
Like, the big one is, like, couscous and hummus get mixed up all the time. So people point at couscous and say hummus and you just, no problem.
Just go with it.
Go with it, you know. Just want to make sure now you know that this is has gluten in it because it's, you know, couscous. Okay. But, you know, just trying not to. But it's an education piece, like, and it's for us too, you know. It's like the thing about teaching piano where you're one class ahead of the student.
Okay.
Like, we find something, we kind of play with it, and then we try to make something with it, and then it ends up down on the counter, and we're the next week we're teaching people, and we only found it last week.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's like,
because there's a beautiful bap that I get if I'm really hungry. It's like a yogurt chicken.
Yeah,
it's incredible. Yeah. Like, it's really lovely, and it's toasted and everything. Beautiful. It's lovely. So, like, have you found you've expanded the offerings from just the basic salad?
Yeah, for sure. Like, we've diversified now out into covering the basis of bread and hot dishes and different types of salads. And we even do flatbready type things. We had the falafel going for a while.
Yeah, I was obsessed with that in Winterbury Street.
Still doing it at the markets.
Gorgeous.
You know, so, like, we're constantly kind of changing it up, I suppose. But the core business is still the salads, for sure.
So can you take us back to, I know you went to UCC and you did a degree in English literature.
Yeah, English and psychology.
Yeah, wow. So that was before you decided to work in food. But a lot of people, that happens, you know, they go and get their
degree.
Yeah,
I had no idea what to do. And I just thought arts was a grand way to keep pass my time, I
guess. And you were working part-time in a restaurant.
I was working part-time in a restaurant. My mum would have opened a restaurant before I went to college.
Okay.
We were actually only talking about it last night. When I was about 14, 15, she opened a place on Bridge Street called the Boccaria. So that would have been my first kind of taste. Well, then even before that, she would have worked in different places, as we were talking about before we started here with the Ivory Tower. So I would have spent a huge amount of time within the industry, I guess.
Okay.
So for me, it was kind of almost logical in a way, like a natural the way it happened.
And,
yeah.
And then you went to South America.
I went to South America then,
Traveling for...
Was this after college?
Just when I finished college, yeah.
Okay.
Just when
has to be
college.
Done.
Has to be done. Yeah, yeah.
So you were very clever. You didn't blow all your money, you said.
Yeah, that's, like, true. That I basically halfway through the trip was kind of realizing that it was a little bit Groundhog Day, and I kind of wanted to do something that was a little bit more interesting. And I was kind of, like, finding myself wanting to do food related things in South America, and not really kind of finding something that was catching me to stay in one particular place. So, I came back and I did the Ballymaloe course.
And that was the 12-week one, is it?
The 12-week one.
Very intense, is
January it? January to the end of March.
Okay.
Really intense, yeah. Like, I think the idea came to me on, like, maybe the 21st of December.
Wow.
And then I was home on the 23rd of December. Dorina told me to come down on Stephen's Day.
Wow.
I went down, so that's like 5 days after I came home. Went down, met her, got a full flash tour through the whole place, and I was on the course on the 2nd of January.
Would you say that that course really helped you focus on your direction with your business?
Sure.
That
yeah,
you come out of that sure of what you wanted to do?
Completely, yeah.
And I'd say they give you that scope. You obviously get the basics, but they give you the scope to kind of... I always feel people who come out of those courses, they've been kind of nurtured to expand their own kind of individuality when it comes to food and cooking.
Yeah, it's the most intensive thing I've ever done. Like, it's and it was just, I put so much effort into it, but also I was lucky in that I had done, let's say, a year of kind of full-time chefing already before that, going up the ranks in places. So,
starting, so you've done your time as such.
Yeah, starting as a kitchen porter and then working as kind of a commis chef and stuff. So I knew how, like, deliveries come in, they need to be sorted, they need to be put away. I understood about bulk cooking and how, like, when you're cooking bigger amounts, it's kind of a whole different technique to it.
Okay.
But I, like, what Ballymaloe then gave me was it brought it right back to actually, like, putting something together on a plate.
Okay.
And Ballymaloe isn't really, it's not so much a chefing course in the way that they train you to be able to run a kitchen of 100 staff or anything like that, mm-hmm. because they say, you know, you'll only learn that out in the world anyway, is kind of the approach. And they're like, what we want to do is show you what it is on the smallest minute level. Like, how do you cook five portions of the most amazing, perfect something?
Okay.
So for me, knowing the rest of how kitchens flowed and everything, I just had a much quicker understanding to access that information.
Brilliant.
So for me, it was really like, I felt like I had an upper hand a little bit in the course, so I was able to just suck in everything. But I mean, we were up at 7:30 in the morning, straight in, you're in there like before 8 getting set up, and then you're still there after 8 in the evening, and that's like, that's 6 days, maybe even 7 days a week if you take on the weekend stuff.
Intense.
Yeah.
You know what came across to us? We did a Cork Fashion Week show in the Grain Store, and Doreena was at our table at it, and I was just mesmerised in her natural kind of love and knowledge of, like, how food at a table that's right in front of you can become such a gorgeous discussion point. Mm-hmm. Like, she was able to talk about how everything was made, that so much of it was so grown on the land. Yeah. It just brought a whole new element or new kind of perspective to us thinking about what we're putting into our bodies, I suppose, as well.
Yeah. She's been proven right now as well.
She has.
Everyone made fun of her or challenged her on all her different things, and now scientists and everyone have all changed their mind, you know, and she's just sat true to it the whole way through.
And you know what I love is there's been so many fad, especially in our industry, there's so many fad things that change all the time. And, you know, we're at the end of the day, you know, we're born in this country and our DNA is a certain way. And, you know, like, I know it's all about coconut oil one week and something new the next. And while they're all fine in their own place and they have their own place, I love that Doreena and Rachel and Rory, you know, they use butter. They use milk. They use, you know, ingredients that are on our doorstep. Mm. And, you know, they're fine, healthy ingredients as well.
I think that when you live here, you need to eat the stuff that's from here. Like, as you were saying, that our bodies require, you know, like in the winter, you know, you need to eat more fatty foods because it's the winter. You know, you need to be able to protect yourself and whatever. But like, the people who are making that coconut oil are laughing at us because we're getting the third, the fourth, the fifth pressing here. You know, like when you go to Italy and you eat the olive oil that they have in the country, like the stuff they're sending over. So like, and it's the same with the butter. When you eat the butter over there, it's crap. Like, so, you know, we should just enjoy the things that we have here because they're the best versions of them in the world. Like, people would die to be, like, the trends in other places would be the butter and the beef that we have here. You know, it's kind of funny when you look at it that way, to just enjoy what you have. And
my friend, our best friend, Claire, actually, her husband, Barry, he is involved in Kilhora Orchards and the cider that they produce. And last week we went down to the beach and he had done the foraging course in Ballymaloe. Mm-hmm. And I brought my four-year-old with us and they were like tasting peppardillus, which was growing on a rock. And I was like, you know, that just looks like seaweed. Tasted it and could not get over the flavour from it. And like, she went into preschool the next day for news time and stood up and was like, oh, I was eating apple leaves or what, apple spinach or something, and sea spinach and peppardillus and all these different types of raw ingredients that we found in Myrtleville.
Wow. Yeah.
And it was just so great to get her mind to think like that as well. It's incredible. Yeah, it's great. I think we've had years of convenience food of like working all these, like, you know.
Yeah, and when you think back, like, the ordinary Joe Soap thought waffles and these like crappy foods, because it was all the rage in the 80s. They came out and it was, you know, cheap and it was thrown at you in the supermarkets. And I think it's gone full circle now. It's completely turned around.
But growing up, our dinners were just meat, vegetables, potatoes. They were it was really clean, simple kind of food. Mm-hmm. But on a Wednesday, once we got to secondary school, spaghetti bolognese was thrown into the mix on a Wednesday.
When bolognese came in, all right, that was
I would run home.
Yeah, my mother's still afraid of it. She's like, no, not cooking it. Never.
It's too foreign.
Never a stir fry in our house. Nothing.
No way.
No way.
Right.
Can I just ask you about the name, the Rocket Man? Because I know it came to you during the course. And what's behind it?
I mean, really, it was like salads, you know. There wasn't much more to, like, the other things you can draw from it were just a play on the words and everything, but it was the salad. Salad man.
Because the name is so important, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
I was having such crack. So I've good few friends who are different types of farmers and different traders at the markets, and everyone kind of has a bit of a nickname, like Mark Cheese and whatever.
Okay.
And the other day I was talking to Paddy Franklin, who has Kilbrack Farm, and he was just like the rocket man. He's like, you know, you're just such a lucky bastard, because like everyone just calls me Paddy Veg.
Oh. And I was Paddy actually Veg. Listening to you know, Hairy Babies, t-shirt company, at a conference on Friday. And his original name was going to be Irish Teas, Daddy.
Oh,
like,
God, yeah.
Like, which is still bland.
So, good, like, so bland. Mm. And then his wife said to him, and she looked at a picture of him when he was a child, and she said, oh, my God, you were such a hairy baby. And that stuck. And, like, they said it's literally, oh, yeah, he wrote a press release then, a fake press release.
Okay.
About being a hairy baby, and there was loads of fake stuff on it, and it actually was printed in every paper because they just thought it was
that.
So funny. Yeah, at the end, it was obviously said it was fake, but that, and there was no social media when he started, so he basically relied on press, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how his business rocketed.
That's it. Just goes to show, though, like, and you know, when you set up the Rocketmen initially, I guess people don't realize the extent of, you know, the branding, getting, you know, your website up, getting the shop even kitted out. You know, was it a huge undertaking? Was there any stage that you went, what have I gotten myself into here? Or, you know, like I find when we first started out years ago, and sometimes I wish, I kind of feel we need to go back there a little bit more, but you're fearless. You don't have as many worries. You take more risks at the start and you kind of just believe it's going to happen. Whereas you can get a little bit more, maybe cynical as the years go on, because you've more to lose or whatever.
Naive, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I didn't have a clue. So that's the first
thing. That's a great start.
Really didn't. Probably still don't. but like I was helped a huge amount by the people around me, but like we didn't really have, you know, there's been little bits of raising a finance for a certain thing and then kind of like paying it back quite quickly. But for the most part, we never did a loan.
Okay.
Like, we certainly never did an official loan. We might have done a small fundraising thing. But so it was really kind of like
organic.
Do this thing. Money comes back. Put money aside. Wait till that particular pot gets to this level and then do this.
Okay.
Do you know? So and that was done by necessity because that's what we just had to do.
Okay.
Because there wasn't money to use, but it definitely meant that mistakes were cheap. Do you know, like you weren't like there was never a moment where it was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Because
you were saying at one stage you were working full time and doing the markets.
Then. Yeah. My really, really, really skinny days. Like I'm skinny enough now, but
you look back on pictures.
I look at pictures and I'm like, oh, my God. I'm so sunburned, too, because I was at the markets all the time.
Wow. That's tough going, though, holding two jobs.
Yeah. So I was doing the full kind of 40 hours a week in between Cafe Gusto and Liberty Grill. And then, yeah, so like I would, Wednesday, I'd be all day cooking at home. And then Thursday morning, I'd go to the market. Thursday night, I'd come, or Thursday afternoon, I'd come back, go into Cafe Westo, do the full shift, come back, clean up after the market a little bit, wake up the next morning, do a full cook day for Rocketmen, then go into Cafe. And that would go on for like 5 days straight. I'd do that.
It's like so eat, sleep, breathe, what you
it
do.
It really like. Was like 100, more than 100 hours a week working. Yeah.
And I think that's really interesting for people to hear, because I think, like, people don't realise, you know, sometimes, you know, people are afraid to kind of take the jump. But I think there is, you know, that saying that, you know, prepare to fail. That's it. like if you just put the work in,
it does
work out
work.
Usually. But if you just put the welly in.
And I'm afraid there's a generation coming up that don't actually, you know, see that. Like there a lot of them get handed things by their parents. I think we're of a generation that worked really hard.
I know. And not to generalize, obviously, but we do come across that a bit. And I guess that's another kind of reason we do the podcast. We come across a lot of people who want to come on board with events and they kind of don't realize they can't have their phone out at the event. And you're like, okay, you need to get down your hands and knees now and actually work, you know.
Yeah,
and
people see the glamour of it, of having a shop or, you know, running an agency, whereas there's a lot of background work. Yeah. Really.
There is no glamour.
Yeah,
no.
Glamour and no glam. Anyway.
No, not us either.
Babe was only saying, like, she was at a conference recently on Friday and she was saying, you know, we get this all the time. We go places and people are like, you're flying it, you're everywhere. And it's like,
We're hustling.
Really, did I make a wage this week? You know, and we don't lie about it because you have to be authentic in what you do. But like, you know, we work very hard and we have to kind of hustle for every single booking and every job. And but there is, it's funny how public perception can be like, you're flying it as if I'm plaiting a Mercedes at home or, you know.
We still get that all the time, or like these really kind of bizarre ways people kind of view like success or something.
And
kind of like, it's still like,
you're working, like,
you know, like I'm in there putting together salads and $6.50 a pop and just, you know, like, it's very much a job.
Hoping the lunchtime rush comes your way.
And then it lashes rain at 10 to 1. You're like, whoa, this is actually going to affect us balls.
Real worries. Like, tell me, so you mentioned there a while ago, Jack, that, You had a lot of good people around you guys when you first started out. And with the new website, neighbourfood.ie, it's very much about building a community. Can you tell me what the initial concept was? Was it always something you wanted to do? Because I think taking businesses to the online world, it's almost a necessity now, but it's fine-tuning it to make it work. And I think, I feel you've hit it after, like, using the service myself. I think it's one of the best things I've seen in Cork in a long time.
And even though it is online, I love the way you're going to have, like, little tasting evenings and there's still, you know, that
personality
pickup
in there.
Sure. How did the concept come for all of that?
Well, I suppose probably the issues came before the concept did. Do you know, like, I felt all of the things that I now feel that Neighbourfood is trying to solve, all of those things were there. Like, for instance, when I started Rocket Man, and a lot of advice I got from everyone from business people to support networks to customers to, like, everyone's just like, get your product on the shelves, you know, get your logos pre-pack, you need to consider outsourcing. And it's all about this kind of like trying to become like the next Cully and Sully or something.
A chain thing almost.
Yeah, just like bigger is the only way you're going to be able to do anything. And even other businessmen kind of like smirk and kind of look down at you when you say things like, no, I actually just want one shop or two shops, or why aren't you expanding to Dublin? And it's like, well, you know, you're never going to make it if you don't keep growing. So this idea of like scaling up was always a bit of an issue, because I tried getting bigger, realizing that the quality drops no matter what you do. You can't keep it. And then we've like kind of pulled it back now, where we can really, really watch the quality and everything. So that feeling for me of like scale being the most important thing in what you do as opposed to quality was like the big flag for me, where I was kind of, and I just watched so many amazing producers want to get themselves to a point where they can survive financially and want to make their business, you know, a success, but focusing on scale and then quality drops and then the business falls apart.
Because essentially they lose control at some point of what they're...
Big time.
And people want to see you when you have a business. They want to see you there, you know.
Yeah. And it was like, how can you make that work? You know, how can you have one small shop and be able to actually, you know, be satisfied by it all and everything? So, yeah, so the option was, as a food producer, was to like get into supermarkets. And I just really, really didn't think that was a good idea. And now I'm starting to realise that I think I was right, maybe. Like, I certainly think from Rocketman's point of view, if I had made that jump or started to pre-pack things, or, you know, I'd really wonder would we have been able to break that next level.
Okay.
And definitely the quality would have dropped. So Neighbourfood is a way for a small producer to be able to supply something else that isn't a farmer's. You can do your farmer's markets, but there's a limit there, you know, and it might not be enough for you to survive. And here's another way that producers can be compensated fairly for the product and not pushed to this 20-30% margin and having to be in 30 super values or something like this to be able to survive, you know, and scale is now no longer the issue. So that was kind of the biggest one for it.
Okay.
And also the fact that you don't have to stand outside all day in the rain at a farmer's market was also pretty...
And we were just saying that, like, when you go to a farmer's market, sometimes you do get a little bit overwhelmed. Like, you go there with great intentions of getting a shop and then you meet John, Mary and everyone else and end up buying coffee and just having
treats,
which is great. And I mean, it is, you know, good to have that sense of community and chat to people.
Oh man, it's vital. And I think, just to say now, and something that, like, I've always been really adamant about Neighbourfood, and now all the producers as well can all agree, now that we're actually up and running, there's no one within the food industry, I think, would argue who is involved, that Neighbourfood is not like in any way going to affect the farmers markets.
Okay.
Like, it really isn't. There might be some people who might swing over in the beginning just to try it out, but if you love going to farmers markets, you will continue to go to farmers markets, because it's a very, very different experience.
Okay.
And for the people who we end up taking from the markets, they weren't going to stay shopping at the markets anyway. Because that social thing is just, it's vital in community, I think.
It is. And I felt as well with our gang, Viv, like, we know so many people who want to buy local produce or, you know, fill their plate with locally grown vegetables, you know, have locally reared, you know, meat on their plate, but they just don't know where to go. And the farmers markets popped up, you know, we were all popping to farmers markets. Maybe certain days we were working and we wouldn't get there. And loads of our gang would have kind of felt, oh God, you know, I just wish I knew a farmer that I could just pop in and that he'd have a little fridge there and I could, you know, knock on the door and say, give me a bag of meat for the week. And while we can do that with butchers and that, there's just a new kind of mindset around food and around shopping, I feel, in our peers. And people want to know where their food comes from. So, like, we have a little caravan in Allahies in West Cork, and when we go down there in the summer, we pass Glown Cross Dairy and we drive in there and they have my daughter on the swings. You know, they're just, it's like, it's not just popping in and buying something. They'll always have them on the swings out the back, and you get to talk about what they do. You get to see the animals on the land. Nothing compares to that. And for the country that we are and that we have been,
exactly,
we should be doing that more anyway. But I think people didn't know how to go about that before. We just passed, saw the sign once and took a chance, went in, knocked on the door, and they had an outhouse with the glass bottles. And
I'm
you
sure
know,
they were thrilled to have you pop in.
But like other cars came in behind us then, and I was like, all right, brilliant. So other people do this. This is great. Mm-hmm. And it was like a confidence thing. We were like, should we knock? Should we ask? Can we get some?
Yeah.
Because both our kids were, we had a little, my son was only one, and I wanted him to have like the most purest milk that I could get once he was drinking that. And we found that there. And then to see that they're at the farmers markets is great. But I was able to go online and buy that yesterday. And now I'll go and pick it up with my meat, with my veg, with my few locally baked treats. And I'll pick that up on Wednesday, because it took me 10 minutes online to buy it. And it just takes,
it'll
for me in a busy week,
to pick it up as well.
Amazing.
The pickup is a couple of minutes max. You can also, so that milk is going to be in a glass bottle.
Yeah, and I bring that back,
you
don't
bring
I?
That back for 50 cents
yeah,
as well.
I do that
so,
on
there's a, so there's a big sustainable kind of touch in this as well in terms
brilliant.
Of packaging, because they don't need to brand and cover things in plastic and whatever, because you've already bought it. So it's about trying to kind of...
And there's no comparison in the taste with that milk.
Nah.
No comparison. Like, it's proper, like, creamy. You know the way it sets on the top?
Yeah.
Like when I used to have milk in my nana's house when I was small. It's just the real deal. Like,
gorgeous.
Will you just tell us... The Jersey Cows.
The Jersey Cows, right. Okay.
Will you just tell us about where the pickups are in Cork?
Yeah, so there's three now. And we're not planning on opening more in Cork. We are looking at Lisavard in about 3 weeks, hopefully.
Brilliant.
That'll be the next one. But yeah, so Cork City collects on a Tuesday evening between 5 and 7, and that's on Barrack Street.
Okay. Where on Barrack Street?
It's in a yard, so it's kind of difficult to pinpoint, but the best way to say it is it's behind Osho Bar.
Okay.
So it's in the lower part of Barrack Street.
Okay.
So if you're coming up from the river past the Flying Enterprise,
yeah,
it's just before the Miyazaki takeaway, before
okay.
the Japanese takeaway, just on the left.
And okay. there's parking so there, isn't
there's
there?
Parking there, yeah. Okay. You can just swing in, park, grab your stuff. I would say the Cork one is like literally less than a minute. You can be in and out. And
that's
you can
amazing.
Get the shopping done in less than 3 minutes.
That's incredible.
So the Douglas collection is on a Wednesday evening between 5 and 7. And that's at On the Pig's Back.
Okay.
And there's also free
parking
there. Some people think that you have to pay for that parking, but you don't. It's free.
It's in the Woolen Mills. I know if you leave your car, you can get clamped. I've
actually
heard.
Around the... That's in the front.
By,
well, around the back,
by
though,
Smith's,
you're fine.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's in at the back.
It's at the back of the
Woolen
Mills, yeah.
Brilliant.
And then the third one is Watergrass Hill. And that's in O'Mani's Bar.
Shout
I think
out to Victor.
Take a bit longer
yeah.
to collect it there, because we'd be chatting to Victor. Let's
yeah.
That.
Yeah.
If you go there, you'll probably end up staying for the whole evening with Victor.
Having wine and the whole
yeah, yeah. Yeah. So Victor
we love him.
Is taking the charge. We love him too. Victor is doing an amazing job,
it's
actually.
Brilliant.
Like my thing with neighbour food, I started it in Cork City because I'm from Cork. I started it in Cork City because I had that building that I wanted to do it in. And I also started it in the city because I thought it would get more of a splash.
Yes.
But the reality, the way that we're excited by this, myself and Martin, by the way, is my business
okay.
partner in Neighbour Food. He's the developer who developed the software.
So go Martin. Okay.
Complimented him many times in this podcast already.
Okay.
I can take no credit for
okay.
how slick
shout
that
out
whole
to Martin.
Thing works. So shout out to Martin. But he, you know, we really think rurally this is really exciting, because the reality is of a farmer's market, they don't work in small rural areas.
Okay.
So like Watergrass Hill can't have a farmer's market because you need X number of customers.
That's population.
They tried it in Glanmire before and it didn't.
It just, you need to have a lot of people coming, you know, and think about it from the point of view of like how many people are working at a farmer's market when you go there. All those people need to get paid.
Yes.
All of those businesses need to make enough money. And, you know, also the wear and tear of the stall and all the extra stock out on the table. Like, it's an expensive operation.
Yeah. Okay.
So a neighbor food is not. It's very straightforward. The producer has the freedom to just drop and leave if they can't stay. And, you know, there's like loads of ways in which that it can be just made more sustainable.
Efficient. Okay, brilliant.
So we would love the idea that Neighbour Food can bring good food to places like Watergrass Hill, mm-hmm. you know, and that maybe we can go out near Mallow and like out Donnerail Way, or maybe we can go down into West Cork, into the parts that don't have an amazing super value,
okay.
And stuff like that, you know, that don't have enough population for a supermarket, they would be able to have a Neighbour Food.
Brilliant idea.
So that's what we're really excited about. Now, we are launching in Dublin in the end of May.
Okay.
But that's the same thing. We're like, we launch in Dublin, we get a bit of crack going there, and then we try and look at all of these little places around Ireland that just only have like a centre to shop in.
Wow.
Like, that's really the case, you know? Yeah.
And there's probably so many farms in all those areas, but people just don't know, you know.
Oh, man, absolutely, yeah. And they're probably supplying into somewhere miles over here where it's getting packaged and covered in plastic and sent miles over there and whatever. Yeah. And yeah, and they're only getting 20 or 30% for it as well.
It really is about going back to basics. Mm-hmm. It's like we've complicated everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like pairing it all back and going back to basics, and like the whole just getting together, the community. And
I think plastic is a huge issue now, and that's been like highlighted massively. So people are a lot more aware of, you know, the plastic in supermarkets is absolutely crazy.
I know, it's horrendous.
Yeah, I'm doing a talk on sustainability in the food world on Tuesday, and I'm really not looking forward to it because it's such a bleak topic.
Okay.
It's so hard to be able to be positive about it.
I know.
But I think with all of these various issues, a lot of people turn away because they just feel like, I just can't even
begin.
Mm. It's too much. I can't even begin to think about that. But like, from using, so I obviously shop at Neighbour Food every week now.
Okay.
Getting high amount supply. But I like have more than halved my waste, my recycling bin. By far, you know, like none of the vegetables or anything come in plastic now, no milk cartons, the yogurt is in a jar, you know, like everything. And then I'm just bringing it back, giving it back to the producer and just cycling back around. That difference is tangible. Like, I'm really seeing it. I'm like, oh my God, I am making a difference. Mm. Like, before, I live in a share house and our recycling bin was always a bit of a kind of a like
overflowing. Yeah.
And then like a little bit into the neighbours and a little bit into the other neighbours, you know. Now it's not full. Like, we're putting it out every 2 weeks and it's not full, you know, which is kind of amazing.
And that's funny because it was only a couple of years ago that we were all patting ourselves. Like, we're notoriously very bad for recycling in Ireland anyway. Mm. And it was only a couple of years ago we were all patting ourselves on the back going, everything's in the recycling bin now. And whereas now we're looking at the recycling bin and saying, this is full of plastic.
I know.
How do I cut this down?
And it's all just about educating, because my parents, I had to educate them. You know, like, it's,
I know,
like, they actually
habits of a lifetime.
Oh, you can't put soft plastic. And then I'm like, yeah, but they just didn't know. I mean, I know. How would they, you know?
And, you know, like, that's true. I would have looked at, like, I would have automatically just felt plastic gone to the bin. Mm-hmm. Whereas now I look at it and a lot of the stuff, like I actually was in a rage over Aldi recently because all of their plastic, like so many items that I had in my shop, I could not recycle, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, why is all
this? Trays and everything,
No, but even the clear plastic and everything. Yeah. But now it's made me think in a good way about like the kids and our toothbrushes. Like, let's get bamboo. Let's, you know, it's making you look at things in a different way, which is always good. Mm. And every little bit, I know our kids are going to look back at us and go, what were they doing? Like, plastic, everything. And, you know, like I have my Keepy cup now, and those little differences can make a huge thing. Like, like, we used to go in and get the plastic cups with the film and just be like get a coffee. I'm on my fourth coffee today, my fourth cup. I mean, it's just crazy. It really is. So I loved the functionality of the site. I found it really easy to navigate. I adored that you can get everything from, you know, broths. There was gelato. There were, I got a tray bake, a millionaire shortbread for myself.
Week calling for tea on Wednesday.
Week, yeah. You've got to come over Thursday.
Oh, sorry.
And I love the house cleaned and everything. And then, you know, my meat, I shop a bit in Omani's and in the market anyway. But this meant that, because I get the bus home a lot, shout out for public transport. But now I don't have to carry my meat. Hooray. I can just pick it up on a Wednesday. All those little things actually make a lovely difference, I think, in the smooth running of my week. But there was gorgeous breads. There's everything. There was, I bought soap, a honey soap, because I'm trying not to get the
Anna from Sea Kings.
From where?
From Sea Kings Flower Farm.
Yeah, I saw spring bouquets.
Yeah, she grows flowers, but then she also makes preserves at a particular time of year. She kind of makes loads of different things. She's amazing.
I just thought it was so lovely that the soap now in the bathroom, instead of this plastic yolk, is going to be locally made honey soap. Love it. So what's your vision for it over the next, I suppose, over the next couple of months? Is it just to kind of spread the word and get as many people involved in this online community as possible?
Yeah, I mean, the way I probably saw it when we started it versus the way I'm seeing it now is quite different. So I am trying to kind of constantly step back and not over control it in any way, because like even the way we manage the collections, we've completely changed now, you know. So I want to try and see how people engage with it and see how the customers enjoy it and how it works for the producers. And is there ways that maybe we're wrong? Maybe we're not doing
trial
it.
And error.
Yeah, maybe we're not doing it the right way, because it is kind of a whole new way of doing something. So mm-hmm. convincing people to use it is tricky. Mm-hmm. Everyone's excited by it, but yeah. actually getting people to get online and do their, like, yeah. it's the one thing we don't buy online is our grocery shop, really.
Okay. Yeah.
I know people are doing Tesco online, but you're talking like 0.02% of the population or something.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now it is growing, but we're not really doing it, so we're trying to convince people to do a whole new way of shopping.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to kind of watch it and not try and overexpand it and not try and rush too fast with it, and just kind of wait and see how it works and how it all comes together. But I would say that right now we are kind of motivated to try and go up into Dublin and do that, because a bit of a national splash would be good.
Brilliant.
And then we can start pulling these hosts out of different parts of the country. So I
love
that
idea.
I don't know the host, but the host is kind of the person who basically manages the collection. And
I was so obsessed when I was on it yesterday. I messaged Viv and I was like, how could we be hosts? I mean, we don't have a clue. All I can make is the spaghetti bolognese.
Sounds fun.
Can we be hosts? What can we do?
Like, anyone can be a host. A host can be a person just looking for a way to build a food community, or they can be someone in the food community, like a producer or someone who owns a cafe. And you don't need to own the property that the collection happens in either.
Okay.
You can ask your local pub that's dead on a Tuesday evening, do you mind if I bring, you know, 40 or 50 people in here to do their shopping?
And it's just 2 hours.
It's 2 hours, or it can be 1 hour.
Okay.
Or it can be, you know, it's all
so it's
very
really
flexible.
Okay.
And it's whatever works within your own community. You know, you say, actually, to be honest, we have a farmer's market on a Tuesday, so that's probably not the best day. Maybe we should do it on a Friday. Like, no problem. You know, so
okay.
it's really whatever works flexible. For you and
because
what works for your producers.
Every demographic's going to be so different anyway, I presume. And
Yeah, it can kind of fit into a community and build a community. And then the host is the one who sends the email. So you've just done an order now, so you probably haven't got the, but there's an opening and a closing email every week.
Okay.
So they are both written by the host. So it's kind of like some new things happening, or this and
lovely.
Here's an event that we're planning on doing, or, you know, Kevin and Glencross Dairy is in this week with some different type of something.
Brilliant.
Or, you know.
Such a good idea.
So the host then is kind of like the pillar of the whole thing.
Keeping it all together.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm intrigued. What's your favourite restaurant in Cork at the moment?
Oh, is he allowed to say this?
Definitely allowed to say it. Who can I get a backhander from? I really love Mia, the Japanese chef, Takashi Miyazaki.
I'm just intrigued by what he does with food. And
yeah, like he's a real artist. It's very like soft, like his approach to food. And I personally hate Michelin star restaurants.
Yeah.
Because if you imagine, it's an art form, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But it's also numbered and ranked.
I know. And isn't that like the downfall of so many businesses once they get that?
Yeah, that there is that part of it too. But like, how can you rank art? Like, there's no other type of art form that has a ranking.
Mm-hmm.
So just imagine the type of ego that ends up into that.
Yeah,
do you know
okay.
what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and for me, being interested in food and eating food, I eat very much the personality of the person who's made the food. Like, that's what I get from things.
Okay.
And I don't care if it's an amazing creation and it's so cleverly thought out, but if there's a load of ego on the plate, like, it's not, to me, it's not like, it doesn't feel good. Do you
okay.
know? You're kind of like, oh, wow, well done. But also, like, I'd hate hanging out with you.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, that kind of way. Okay. But with Takashi, he's completely egoless. Like,
okay.
it's really, really not.
That's
it's like
brilliant.
A painting, and he's like sharing it, and he's like listening to everybody around
he
him. It's like a reflection of everybody that's around him.
Wow.
Yeah. And so
imagine
getting
that across in your art, in
yeah,
your
yeah.
food. That's
yeah.
incredible.
So for me, I just feel like very humble, I think, when I eat his food. And
that's
from the
amazing.
Takeaway as well.
Okay.
Brilliant. Yeah.
That's amazing. Did you see the I think it's the most recent series of Chef's Table. There's an Italian butcher.
Did I watch? I watched it like three times.
No way.
Yeah.
I just loved the episode so much. Have you seen
no.
it? I was only saying to Jean in the last episode that I had a bit of kind of fatigue over, you know, you shouldn't be eating this and there's antibiotics in your chicken and everything I put in, the joy was gone in food because
oh,
there was
yeah,
this
the
worry
is
worry all
is
the
gone,
time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had actually, I say about a year ago, stopped eating meat. I just kind of was overwhelmed with all this online information and things I was reading in the press, and I just stopped eating. Anyway, I got very sick, and I had not realised that my B12 stores weren't good. And then it kind of was a realisation for me that, you know, my body needs certain things, and it's really about the quality of what I eat, and while being aware of sustainability and the planet and everything. But when I watched that episode, I had a new kind of love for the process and the animal and everything about the butcher and what he does and his job, instead of actually hating him because of But I thought it was so endearing how he, you know, it was a generational family business, and he had gone through quite a bit at one particular stage and felt he wasn't carrying the can for his dad when his dad had passed away. And then he went back to, I think it was like a mentor of his father's who used to source the meat for him, and went back to go through the process again. And he found like a new love for it. But rather than just have the butchers, he was making cuts that, say, everyone was coming in looking for the best steak always, because that's what we do when we go to a butcher's. But he was saying that, you know, he cooks all the animal.
He was celebrating all the other bits.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Figuring out ways that people would eat the other bits. And
then actually doing it so people could come and experience it.
That's why he started cooking, wasn't it?
Yes.
He was like, I don't want to be a chef, or I didn't want to open a restaurant, but I just needed to show...
To educate people.
Yeah. Yeah, really, really interesting guy. But that, like, I would give a shout out here to Owen in Omani's.
Okay.
Like, Owen has that same passion for meat. It is much more about trying to allow people to explore other cuts, because at the end of the day, if we all just at steak, you know, it's way more animals being slaughtered and way more food being wasted. So we have to kind of move away from the our favourite pieces and explore other parts. Okay. And I mean, for me personally, I believe that actually all the rest of it is way tastier anyway. I actually think the worst part of the animal is the most popular bits. But anyway, you know, so, but you need to kind of explore it, and you need to take it easy. But Owen in Omani's, any of the butchers that are in Omani's, have that conversation with them in there, and they will take you through some other things, and you can explain what you kind of like. I kind of like the texture of this, or, you know, I don't really like very gamey flavours, so I like something simple. And then they will show you that there's other ways to eat meat, and it's way more sustainable to do it that way.
I was in there 2 weeks ago, and I was talking to him, and I literally go in there on the run. I pick up like some lamb koftas, a couple of burgers for the kids, and run, and mince for the kids, shepherd's pie, whatever. And I had a bit of time, and I just asked him. A couple of my friends have said, you know, speak to your food providers, speak to people in the market. People love to talk about their businesses. And it was only 5 minutes, but I just admitted that I'm, you know, I don't have a lot of skills in the kitchen. And, you know, what meat should I be? How can I broaden my horizons a bit? Mm. And like the information that you get from them and the ideas that they give you that you might not.
And he was probably dying to talk to you about that as well.
But he was so interesting, you know, and you can see their passion for what they do as well when they're talking, and that gets you excited about it as well. And then you also have the feel good when you walk away of supporting local and then providing like local good food on your family plate. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a whole circle of goodness, really, you know. So community events, food, everything that you could, that you should be on board with, really, at neighbourfood.ie. Jack, we wish you the absolute best with this business. We feel very passionate about it. We want everyone to get on neighbourfood.ie. I think we might do something when this podcast launches around it, you know, just kind of to get people to go over and to just experience it and let us know what they think about the service and that as well. I just feel like I just can't believe it hasn't been there before now. It's just such a great concept and great idea.
You said it's so easy. We should all be doing it.
I know. And thank you for bringing great local food to our plates and our homes. It's just amazing.
My pleasure.
Group hug. So, Jack, anything else before we sign off?
No. Sure, that's it.
You're just a busy bee. Busy bee.
Yeah. Well, I have an afternoon off now today.
Oh, love.
Enjoy.
Yeah, I'm actually going out to one of the farmers who supply neighbour food for lunch.
Oh, how lovely. And again, back to the community of it all. Yeah, that's great. Well, enjoy. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining us here at The Life Hustle at Cork's Red FM, and we look forward to seeing you soon.